This is episode number 4. Everyone that you will meet knows something you don't.
Welcome to the Innovateology podcast, where it is all about unleashing the creative side to find those brilliant, disruptive ideas to validate and build innovative solutions to solve life's problems.
Today we're talking about networking, and we're looking at ways to master the art of networking effectively and how to do this in a manner that we can build a skill or get a new job, or how do you use this build upon your own network and actually be meaningful, where you have contacts that are giving you information in return. So just to kind of frame up the situation, so I'm sure many of our listeners have probably felt frustrated with networking, where you feel like you're inviting others and maybe you're constantly giving to others, but no one seems to be giving that same value in return. Or have you ever been in a situation where you go to an event and you feel like you don't know anybody that you can really relate to? And maybe this feels like high school all over again, or one of those awkward situations of starting a new job and you're not sure what kind of questions to ask. I think as humans, we sometimes forget that it's that we make an impact and we connect with others in this world. And so how do we do that? I can give an example. So when I was in Paris, France, I had left my normal life in Seattle. I really didn't know anybody. I was alone, except for my husband, who was working during the day. And I couldn't rely on him to basically make friends for us in France. He had to go on with his life. And so I had to kind of do this self-assessment of how do you step outside your comfort zone and learn quickly and adapt in a new culture. And, you know, I think sometimes people say, well, just make friends with other Americans, or just make friends with who's English first. Well, for me, I decided to do a little bit different approach, where I said, okay, if I need to learn the French language, how am I going to do this? And one way I did that was by joining a swim club, a triathlon club. I did cooking classes. I even took a lifeguard exam in French. And by doing that, I started to become confident in my ability to speak another language. And I also learned that vocabulary. And within a few years, I was actually had more French friends than I did Americans living over there. And it kind of taught me this lesson of, it's okay, you can step into that uncomfortable zone, and you just have to kind of get comfortable doing it. It was not an easy task by any means, but by learning to network in another language, I could quickly grow my experience, start to offer value to others. And my value was being able to speak English and knowing the technology side of a business to help bring that back into the U.S. And so as a result from all this networking, I quickly could get jobs, or I could quickly find projects that were interesting because I could help those people. And it wasn't just something that happened overnight. It took many years to get to this momentum, and many trials and errors, and many times of being rejected many times over and over and over again for trying to ask for someone to come out to coffee so I could just meet with them and discuss a particular opportunity. So from all of that, I went from zero connections to many connections, and it wasn't always intuitive along the way. So what we're hoping to answer in this podcast and kind of speed up that process of trial and error from learning from others is, how do you actually make that targeted network? How do you network both internal to your company, but also keeping that external network alive? Also, how do you build yourself as an influencer or subject matter expert? So we have a couple other folks on the line today to kind of help address these questions. We have Melinda and Melissa on the line, and we're going to be diving deep into this networking theme and kind of really looking at this subject and exploring it from some different avenues. So with that, I'm just going to get started into kind of this first area where I'm looking at, how do you build that meaningful network and how do you become that inverse? So we're really trying to address that question. But before I do get into that, I always like asking questions. So with Linda and Melissa on the line, can you think of maybe one example where you made a mistake in networking, or you had a worst experience when you tried to network and it didn't really go so well? So Linda, why don't we start with you?
Okay, sure, Mary. Actually, I would say the biggest mistake I made was just not making the time for networking, because it's so easy, especially professionally, to focus on your job. And what I've learned to encourage with other people is to be career focused, because when you really think more bigger picture and think about your career, you realize that networking is essential. If you're just focused on a day-to-day job, you really find it hard to make time because there's never enough time. So I would say the biggest mistake, not making time.
And Melissa, have you experienced mistakes in networking over the past years, or had a really bad experience with networking?
Well, I think probably looking back, the biggest thing was not taking networking as a with a strategy. You know what I mean? I just kind of went to different things, but I didn't think strategically, like where I should be, where, you know, who I should be meeting. I just, you know, went generally to groups in my business area. And I don't think I've had a really bad networking experience, but probably the worst is myself, is that not getting out enough or not, you know, speaking.
So those are just two examples of kind of where we maybe have faltered along the way with networking. I think we sometimes don't realize how valuable a network is and how a network can really, really help you thrive and not just survive. And so for me, some of the questions that I've been asking throughout my life in networking is, if you've been searching for a job, how can you use your network both internally and externally? Or if you need advice on how to move to that next level in your career, how do you kind of start that conversation? And are you constantly helping people, or are you constantly trying to search for others to help for you? Are you connecting with them, or are you asking the right questions to drive that opportunity in that next meeting? So those are some of the questions that I hope to kind of answer. So there's this situation, and I think the word networking is actually sometimes leaves a bad taste in my mouth, just thinking about all the meetings where I've shown up to a general group networking and really haven't gotten a lot of value. I've probably gotten more business cards than I got value out of the actual meeting. But what I felt like when I walked away was I've really got to dive deep and find more meaning. So finding that targeted audience and starting to develop those powerful relationships and not just getting a business card. So what I started to do is I said, okay, let's start to put some purpose around this. Let's start to think of it as a goal that you want to achieve. So I set up a quick goal, and I said, I want to meet 5 people in my industry from 5 different companies. I like to use the 5-5 rule. And what I did is I went on LinkedIn and I started looking at benchmarking in my industry. So I looked at my job title and I said, okay, what would that translate to other companies? And let's see if I can get these folks on a quick phone call, a quick 20-minute phone call, because I know that they're going to be all around the country, or they might be in another country. And how can I start to build that external network outside of my company, but yet still, you know, drive value within my company? So I thought of some questions of how to quickly get on a LinkedIn message and network, or essentially get that first bite of opening up the lines of communication. And sometimes I know that there are industry events that you can go to, but a lot of times as a working mom, I don't always have time to go to them. So this became just a little easier way to handle that. So a lot of times people are very, very honored the fact that you reached out and you had some questions for them about some of the marketing that they're doing or industry changing events, and just asking for their opinion candidly. So I actually got into quite a few companies at the time that when I was doing this, and I still do this today. And I'm surprised at how much people do share. And it takes a lot of courage to do this, and I know it's not something that kind of came firsthand. I really had to practice this, and sometimes my messages maybe weren't crafted enough to come across as wanting to be accepted by the other party. But after doing this, I've kind of opened that door so where I could start to really make those meaningful relationships with others outside of the company. And what this allowed me to do is just have more mobility, because I could hear what was going on with the industry trends. I could hear if there was a brand new platform that somebody was introducing. I could hear about those bugs before it came to me, or I got to see firsthand. I could hear also about roadmaps that were going on. I could hear about latest product developments. And this kind of helped with my company as well too, that I could bring that knowledge to the table and say, hey, look, this is what the industry is doing. This is where it's going. Maybe we should start to influence it here. Also internally within your company, this is super, super important as well too. This is where you're going to gain alignment and start to become that influencer. I have a rule where I never eat lunch alone. I think every day I have lunch with somebody new. And the one thing I ask is I say, can you introduce me to somebody that I could bring value to as well too, or, you know, even help them out. And sometimes it might be even helping someone gain another position within a company. It's always, how can you help them? Always be giving. And I love that term ABG instead of the sales pitch of ABC, it's ABG, where it's always be giving. How can you give to others? And also this helps with internal networking, because you're going to hear what other departments are doing with their roadmaps, and they're going to come to you when they want you to sit on that at the table to be able to give strategic advice. And even when during brand planning season or product development season, I'm usually that first person that they'll come running to. That's what I want. That's my goal, is that I want them to come ask me those questions. I want to be seen as an influencer. And then also outside of work, you can think of this as with your family, or maybe you have young children in your life and you want to get the best for them. How do you build that network? So one thing that I'm doing right now is that since I speak French at home, or maybe there's others that speak another language at home, you can feel the importance for this, is that you have to kind of create more peer pressure. As they get older, they need somebody out there that's their age that speaks it as well too, so they can see the importance. So what I did is I started on meetup.com, a group of other families that speak French at home, and we do activities together. So it's really important that you start networking in many different areas of your life. It's not just about work. It's also about family, and what kind of goals do you want to have with your family? So those are just three examples of kind of how I've networked. So I'm going to ask a quick question to both Linda and Melissa before I move on to some of our action items. But Linda, how have you become an influencer within your network?
Well, I would say one way was I began, much as you suggested, listening to people, that evolved into interviewing people. And that evolved into creating a book that actually became a book about different persons' experiences during career transition, and people providing advice and tips to people. So really, it was fun to put the book together. It certainly is something that I look at as helpful, and people have said it's helpful to them with lots of different valuable tips. And I learned a new skill by putting a book together. And then I found in the process, I became asked to speak at different groups in order to share what I've learned. So the mere process of interviewing people and putting the book together, I became an influencer.
And Melissa, how have you become an influencer within your network, whether it's work, or I know you have an artist background?
I think it's, you know, becoming an influencer is someone who has new ideas, or ideas that are, you know, cutting edge. And so I think, you know, if you want to be an influencer, you have to bring something out there to everyone, either, you know, in talks that you do or at work, pushing one idea that you really think is going to help the company move forward.
Excellent. So a couple of action items to kind of learn from, as I call it, the new school versus the old school way of networking. Old school meaning you have a bunch of business cards and you're just going around and you're just kind of throwing it around the room without really offering strategic value about what you do, how you can help others, and continue to help others, versus the new school way of kind of targeting and making meaningful relationships. And it's the ABG rule, always be giving. I think sometimes we forget about the always be closing. that puts you on a lot more stress and probably leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth when they feel like they're being in a sales pitch versus a giving pitch. So think about your internal and external network, and then think about that win-win for both parties. So as you're driving, maybe that win-win doesn't come around on that first meeting, but keep trying, keep trying. Also keeping those relations, keep on developing those relations. Even if you just met one person, call that person back, ask them for coffee, because chances are they're going to be able to help you. They may have not been in the right frame of mind at that moment that you met them, but you know, keep on thinking how you can drive value with them and how they can drive value with you. It's not always something that we think about first and foremost, but usually it takes me like 1 or 2 seconds after the fact of realizing what happened to connect the dots there, but never stop influencing there. Even outside of work, what are you doing to influence your network and grow those relations? Keep thinking about what goals you want to achieve outside of work, whether it's learning another language, whether it's wanting to travel with others. Just keep those relations open, because you'll never believe some of the people that I've met who enjoy the same hobbies that I do that are in my same industry and can help you get that next job or career move. And then also the last part that we sometimes also think about, and there's this great website called Art of Charm that I'll leave on the show notes, is working on that body language. So this is something that we tend to forget about. I know I do, and this is a really good reminder that was on the Art of Charm website, is I love this door example. So when you're going to go into a meeting or you are passing through a doorway, that's the time to take a deep breath, roll your shoulders back, put your head up, and smile. Because believe it or not, smiling is that first impression that people leave, and that kind of opens up that question to be able to network from that hello to asking that first question. So with that, those are a few of my action items. I'm going to turn it over to Melissa to kind of talk more about strategic targeting and networking and striving to be that expert.
Yeah, so as like I said before, you know, probably the biggest mistake that I've made in networking is not thinking of it from a marketing point of view of strategically, how am I approaching my network? And there's many ways to do that. One way can be targeting. So if you look back at what a network is, it's basically, you know, building and maintaining trusted relationships for support, for sharing information, your business that has a common interest. And you all should look out for each other and help each other succeed. So there's different reasons why, you know, you're going to use your network. So one, maybe you own your own business and you want to find new clients. Maybe you lost your job and you need a new one, or you just want a new job. Or, you know, you want to meet a higher level of contacts, people that are higher up in the business than you are. So you can find many reasons of how strategically to approach your network based upon, you know, what you're trying to do, what you're trying to accomplish. So one way is to spend targeting, which is kind of like the 80-20 rule in marketing. But look at it, maybe I'm going to spend 90% of my time, networking time, on maybe 5 to 10% of my network. So who that 10% depends, again, on what's your criteria? What are you focusing on? And I'm going to use an example. Is say you want to be the expert or one of the experts in your field or a master in your field. I mean, there's a lot of other things you should be doing, but one way you can approach it is through your network. So you would spend 90% of your networking time finding and building relationships with the other 10% of the people who are at your level or better. So try to connect with those, the experts that are in your field. You know, I have a friend of mine who this is kind of an example, but she only played tennis with people who she thought was better than her. And I always thought, well, first, that's kind of mean, because she wouldn't play tennis with me because I wasn't better. But then, you know, I realized that, you know, she's active, you know, for me, it was just fun. But for her, it was, you know, she was trying to get better, and that was her strategy. So that's good. So first, identify who those 10% that are better by you, and you can pick a criteria. You can even get even more targeted. say it's their particular skill. Now I'm going to use an example as if you were an oil painter. You know, this could apply to business too. Maybe the criteria is what galleries other artists are in, what kind of subjects do they paint, the level of their prices for their paintings. Maybe you just want to focus locally, or maybe you want to focus, you're locally known, but you want to get more nationally known. So again, you got to kind of figure out what's your criteria when you start targeting. Then create different tiers of artists you want to meet, ones at your level or above, by either, you know, nationally you have one set, and then maybe locally you have another set.
So, Melissa, once you've identified the top 10% of individual artists or galleries, for example, that you perceive are better than you or in the top of their field, what are some ideas to build relationships with them?
So this is, you know, you can apply this to business too, but for artists, it's, you know, going to their gallery shows, conventions, art museums of those artists. Now there are a lot of conventions, you know, for artists compared to, you know, 10 years ago. So go to opening night where the artists are showing. Bring your card and talk to them. Really study their work and their philosophy around their work. Have, you know, ready in your head what you would say to them, why you appreciate their artwork and why it connects to you. Because for some reason, you know, their artwork is connecting to you. Another thing that I've done is take workshops from artists that I really admire and that I love their paintings. You could also ask another artist or another business person if you could be their mentor through either a paid apprenticeship or just as a free assistant to help them out. Or also follow them on social media, Facebook, Instagram. You could Pinterest their paintings up, since this is such a visual field. You could meet or connect with artists, the people who deal with these artists, so different, connect with the different gallery owners, the frame shops, the supply stores, magazine publishers, etc. Or also put out there, suggest a group show with you and another artist, the other artist, or just, you know, go out if it's landscape, go out to an outdoor painting excursion. So also you can use meetup.com like Mary has, and I've done this, is gone out to meetup.com in Philadelphia, two Philadelphia area artist groups, and painted with different artists. Another way is to look at something similar to your field. So the top people who are, you know, so this is artistic, but poets, outdoor sculptors, landscape architects, and try to go to those meetups also. But you should never see any other person that you're networking with as competition. You should see yourself as a long line of a historical group, in this case, artists who came before you and after you, and we're all striving to get better. So, you know, don't think of anybody as competition. So my three action items are: one, strategize your network. One way is by targeting, and that way is spending 90% of your time on 5 to 10% of your network. Define your goal. What's your goal? And my example was be an expert or master in your field. And then the third thing, just figure out who those 10% are and how to build relationships. So that's my take on it. And next is Linda.
Yeah, Melissa, that was so interesting. And I feel that what you really shared so well is that the same fundamentals apply whether you're networking in business or in some personal or craft pursuit. The same principles apply. So I'm going to share a networking point of view that comes from a real professional experience. Oftentimes, the Northeast region of the United States has been referred to as the medicine chest. This is largely due to the plentitude of pharmaceutical and biotech companies, as well as leading healthcare insurers, hospital systems, and prominent medical universities. All this has translated into jobs, often with high incomes, for decades. However, for many reasons, the last decade has seen an employment contraction, and this has left thousands of highly paid professionals without employment. The leading healthcare professional association in the Northeast therefore created a subgroup in response to this situation called Women in Transition, with the intention to offer support to the hundreds of members who became unemployed. I led the group for about a year and a half. The women participants were lawyers, marketers, scientists, and finance professionals, among various other roles. And interestingly, most of them were the major income earners for their families. Now, this was not because they were single mothers, but rather because they earned more than their husbands, who were most often also professionals. The most prominent challenge these women faced upon becoming unemployed, though, was their lack of a network. Most of the women had worked for the same company, even the same business, for decades. So when I asked the women who rotated through the group about their networks, the reply was typically that their network was composed of about 6 to 10 people with whom they worked daily. But after about 6 to 12 months of job seeking, finally landing jobs, I asked some of the women to share what they learned and what insights they acquired and would like to share for the benefit of others. Interestingly, the number one response was to continuously cultivate a professional network and not to wait until you're job seeking. So some of the actions that they recommended was, first, create your own virtual board of directors. And that's not to say that you literally need to ask someone if they would be on your virtual board of directors, but instead to consider people who are in roles that you aspire to, or people who inspire you, or people who are effective leaders, and to cultivate a relationship with them that you can consider this as someone to tap for your own virtual board of directors. The next was to consider job sectors and professions where your skills may transfer. So do your homework and find people who are in those roles and prepare some questions and reach out to them and learn from them what you need to do to develop your skills so they could indeed transfer over to those roles. All of the women said that it's very useful to remember that people like to talk about themselves. So when you approach folks who are in different sectors, instead of feeling a little apprehensive because you're not familiar with the sector, once you're armed with a little bit of research, they'll be more than happy in most cases to talk with you about what they do. And then next, think and act outside of your comfort zone. Proactively acquire network contacts among those people who are in growth industries and or roles. In recent years, technology and globalization has been at the root of job loss for a lot of professionals in finance, clinical research, and operations. Now, the result of this could be that titles in some of these growth industries or roles might be quite different than what you may have been familiar with, particularly people who are more seasoned with a longer time. So you're encouraged not to be title-centric because you could be really limiting your opportunities. Instead, be willing to take a job that maybe has a title that's not quite what you would be expecting, and even be willing to take a job that perhaps is below your pay grade, at least to start. There's a lot of wisdom in this because I've seen many people do this, and they've successfully shot right to the moon, because while they start at a level that's perhaps a little bit below their capacity, their years of expertise and various leadership skills and talents really shine through. And the whole collection of those talents kind of comes together and helps them to excel in their new in the new business that they join.
So Linda, I have a couple questions for you. How do you begin to develop a network outside of your business unit?
Well, I actually think that some of the tips you had shared, Mary, I love the tip around lunchtime, because I think it's the easiest way to begin to look to people who are not the folks who circulate in the meetings you do day in and day out. And so I think a nice opportunity is within your company to look for those opportunities, such as lunchtime or other company gatherings where you can reach outside your group. But also the other is to even begin to become familiar with some of the local professional organizations where you can just check them out. And typically when they have their first 30 minutes of networking, it's a great way to start to meet people who are just in different companies and different roles.
So how do you overcome the discomfort of approaching people to ask them for their time? Do you have some tips and tricks you can share with the listeners?
Yeah, I think the very most important thing is to position in your head that you want to learn something and you want to give in return. So in other words, if you approach somebody and what you're feeling inside is all about, oh, it's somebody I don't know and I need them to give me something and do me a favor, and you know, and it feels like taking, it's more difficult to approach them. But if you approach somebody feeling that you really have a lot to give too, and you want to talk with them to tease out where you can return the favor, I think it really eases the discomfort of that first approach.
Also, what I've noticed too, Linda, is that you never want to keep score.
Yes.
Meaning, like, if someone did something for you, don't always feel like you need to return it. You can return it in different ways at different times, and don't feel like you have to hurry up, because if someone invited you to do something, you need to do it in return. Sometimes it has to happen organically, and I think too often that we tried to make a hurried approach and keep that score, and it can kind of off balance what we're trying to actually give. So how do you find time for networking? I think this is a big question that even working moms have. I know probably working dads as well too. We can't forget about them. Have when you're trying to raise a family, or maybe, you know, you live in a different area than your work, or how do you do this?
Well, it's a huge question because it's the biggest hurdle that most people express. They just don't have enough time. But what I would offer is that you need to look at your day at work, and you need to make sure that every day you're doing the number one most important task or, you know, of responsibility. And you have to build in time for saying, how can I be perhaps creative about that networking, whether it's even in the time before a meeting, getting to know a couple people who you haven't met before, or again, going back to the lunch example, or even after work, inviting somebody to, you know, meet perhaps for a dinner or what have you. But you have to make the time. I think it's critical to your career. It goes back to, you know, Abraham Lincoln, who said, if I have 4 hours to cut, I'll spend 3 of those hours sharpening my saw. I mean, really, if you want to be effective in anything you do, you need to make sure that you build in the time.
Well, this has been an excellent half hour that we've spent talking about networking. To kind of sum up in just a short while, I think all too often we tend to put our networks last. And it's kind of like you got to actually bring that to the top of the list as a priority. I know for a lot of us, we sometimes sit and answer emails more than we think about our human connections. But I think it's now the time where we have to change that. How can we make those in-person conversations happen? So I just want to thank our listeners for listening, and thank our speakers today. And until next time, keep innovating. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening to the Innovateology Podcast. We hope we have generated some disruptive ideas and helped unleash that creative side. Please help us keep innovating and leave us a comment or a review on our website. Till next time, don't stop innovating.